Okay. Can you hear me well enough? Okay. Well, hello, everyone. I'm Suzanne Seymour, and thank you so much to IONS in Utah for inviting me tonight to speak with everyone and share something so personal to my heart and soul that I would love to be able to share with you all tonight. I'm an RN is my background. I'm a registered nurse. I've worked in brain and spinal cord injury units. I've worked in cardiac care. I've been a nursing educator. I've worked for the government in Department of Health. So I've had a vast nursing experience of over 25 years, which my NDE led me to that career. I was 12 years old, and I was a young girl. I'd like to start with, you know, when I tell my story, I like to give people the background, because I think when you're listening, it's important to know. I think it gives the listener an opportunity to know what experiences and where you're from, what influences you had, then tell about my experience and then my life after. And having a fuller picture like that, I think, gives everyone the opportunity to get a better understanding and have more complete questions. So I'm going to start with, here we go. I'm really excited to be here and share. I'm going to start with the Nazis. Germany was the setting where my parents grew up as children. They were in the middle of the war, lots of bombing, lots of survival. And, you know, back then there wasn't a big, my parents didn't have a big opportunity to practice much religion or anything like that. They were just very focused on survival. When they were adults, they moved to this country with my father's company, and he was very proud to come here with a lens company, Carl Zeiss. So they came here, and they were supposed to stay for 2 years, but they decided to stay permanently. They loved it. They just absolutely loved it here. And then along came me, and my mother had always just wanted a family, because during the war, families were split up. She was put on trains with a key around her neck and sent to strangers. So they truly were looking for a peaceful life and a fresh start. Is, you know, getting away from all of the survival they had to endure. They raised me and my brother. We lived in a very loving home, but there was no religion really practiced, or prayer or anything. I don't think I ever heard my mother say the word Jesus or my father. My father felt that religions can start wars. So they stayed away from any type of topics like that. We didn't discuss angels. It was just kind of a basic Christmas, Easter sort of a thing, but that was about it. So that's kind of the background on my parents. They were both really, really valued having a family and gave us a wonderful upbringing. So when I was about 12 years old that year, my grandparents, who were still in Germany, had come and decided to move to the United States, and my mother and my grandparents built a home together. So that year, we were all together that winter, and in that community where they built the home, it was in Pennsylvania. You know, they had a lot of amenities. They had a swimming pools, they had lakes, you could go boating, fishing, hiking. And then they decided to add a ski slope hill, a tow rope. This was nothing open to the public. It was a private community, a small private community. So it was a big facility, but they forgot to, and much to my demise, they forgot to do a lot of regulations. So anyway, we were all in this home in Pennsylvania, a dream come true for my parents, my grandparents, and us, because we're all reunited. And that was a big dream for my mom. So here we have this small little cozy family on a wintry day in January. We look outside and we see it snowing, and the weatherman said, oh, you know, we're going to have a little bit of snow today. But as you know, people from Pennsylvania aren't very afraid of the snow. So we said, you know what, we're tired of staying in the house. My mother said, let's go for a hike. So we went for a hike. And before we left the house, we were in the basement getting our shoes and boots on. And we looked in the corner and we saw an old set of skis for my brother and I, just the two of us. So they said, let's grab the skis along. Why don't we hike up to that ski hill they built? And let's let the kids take a couple of runs down the hill. Sure, great. So we started to leave the house, and my mother, who I really never talked back much to because she was quite a strong individual, she said, Suzanne, put on a scarf, please. It's you know, cover yourself up, put it around your neck. So I did, and I did one loop and swoop and pulled it. It was a long scarf with lots of fringe. And she said, no, I want you to tie it again. And I said, do you mean like a knot? And she said, yeah, you know, tie it one more time, so it's nice and secure. And I had this intuition, or whatever you want to call it, you know, at a young girl, where something in me refused to tie it a second time. And I actually got into an argument with my mother, and I stood up to her, and we were all standing in the driveway ready to go for our walk. And something just came over me where I couldn't tie it another time. And she kept insisting, and I kept saying no. Back and forth we went, and my mother said, you're going to ruin the whole day for everyone, Suzanne. Can you please, please, please tie your scarf? What's the matter with her? Everyone was saying, why is she doing this? This isn't like her. This is so not like her. I didn't give in. And then in the very end, I could see that we weren't going to go, and everyone was very disappointed. So I complied and I tied it. Even tying it, I felt a sickness in my stomach, and I didn't know why. And as we walked up the hill of the driveway, I remember just feeling this absolute panic about this scarf. And yet I kept telling myself to get over it, because it's going to be a great day. We're going to have a good time. Why am I so worked up? So I did, and we continued to walk, and this blizzard came out of nowhere as we were about a quarter of the way. It was a pretty long distance, I would say, oh, a couple of miles. So we, more than two, it was probably about 5 miles. So we were walking, and all of a sudden the snow came down. The weatherman was wrong. We are now in a blizzard. The snowflakes are getting thicker and thicker, to the point where they're falling on your eyelashes and you have to blink so fast because the snow is coming down so hard. We make it to the skiing hill eventually, and very tired. And when we arrived there, we realized that the snow on the road and in the woods, you couldn't tell the difference. We were pretty much lost because you couldn't see the road and the forest. They just met, and it was very hard to tell where you were. But we did climb over blueberry bushes and lots of shrubs, and we got to the ski hill. It was frightening, because back in the 70s, in that community, the roads were not plowed. And this is important as far as timing. The roads weren't plowed. We did not have 911. We did not have a local hospital. The nearest hospital was in New York. So I'm setting the scene for the ski hill and the accident. So the accident happened on the ski hill. There was my family sitting at the bottom, my mother, father, and grandparents, and my brother and I put our skis on, very tired, exhausted. And my parents said, you know, we walked all this way. Maybe we could just get a couple of runs in. Well, there was not a car in sight and there was no one else on the hill. It was just us in the silence of this newly fallen deep snow. Way up on the hill to the right of the ski hill was a community clubhouse. And there happened to be a maintenance man who was locking up. So they went over there and they asked him to please turn on the ski lift. And he came over and he was rushing because he just wanted to get home. So he said, I'll put the key in and I'll turn it on and just shut it off when you're done. And they said, okay. And at that time, my grandfather, who was an engineer, for Mercedes-Benz for many years in Germany, lots of German engineers, they looked at the shack. It was a little shack that had the two gears in that pulled the rope up in a pulley type system. So there was a hole cut out on the bottom of the shack and a hole cut out on the top. And the rope went in the bottom and then went through two giant like gears, probably at least 6 feet tall. And then at the top, way up high, there was a little square cut out and the rope came back out. And there were a lot of metal poles going down. Just the other night, I talked to my brother and he said, Sue, I remember looking at the snow and how hard the rope bounced in the snow. This tow rope was so strong and so unregulated. It was it would burn a hole through your gloves if you didn't grab on, and it would jerk you with such force. It took us like 3 or 4 times just to learn how to hold the rope and not get injured. So my mother was very excited that we could take a few runs down the hill. So once we were able to hold onto the rope and get to the top, we did take a few runs down. Then we thought, you know, we're getting pretty good at this. Maybe, you know, maybe we really are skiers because we never skied before. So we felt like we were skiers now. And we had fun. And then I grabbed on the rope that fateful time. And I remember holding it and my brother was a few feet behind me and we were a little relaxed because now we thought we knew how to do it. And within a few moments, my scarf fringe caught into this nylon rope that was very frayed. So the scarf twisted and spun spirally. And I thought, I can get out of this. I can unravel it. I couldn't unravel it. I couldn't even, within a few short moments, I couldn't even put my hand between the scarf and my neck. And I had to hold on to the rope, which very quickly after I fell from holding on. And I wound up hitting all the poles with my head on the way up the ski hill. And I remember knowing when they were coming. There came a point when I realized, is my head going to fit through that hole in the shack where the rope goes? What's my options? And so I'm still trying to get the scarf loose. And again, I couldn't get the scarf over my head because of that double knot. And I wondered if it had the single knot, if I could have. And I remember thinking I probably could have. So I really knew that my options were slimmer and slimmer, and I was coming up to the top of the booth, and I knew my outcome was going to be either I'm going to be decapitated or my head's going to fit through that hole and probably get grinded by those gears. There was nobody in the booth. There was no safety switch. There was no signs that said don't wear a scarf. There was no trip wire. This was really just a rickety rope that, you know, they built quickly probably and hoped that, you know, it would work well for the community. As I came closer, as I went up the hill, I remember I had a moment where I looked back because I thought, I don't want my brother to see this. And I said, let go of the rope. And I remember that was the last thing I said. I said, let go. And then I turned my head and I continued to fight to get free. And then there came a point where I never saw myself hit the booth, but I knew I knew somewhere in there I died. I knew there's something in my neck that cracked. I could feel my neck was so asphyxiated. And the power of this rope threw me around like a rag doll. And there was a point where I knew, and I began to count down. I remember counting down because I thought I'm going to die. And I counted down, and then I never saw, thank God, I never saw hitting the booth. I wound up on my left side, laying in the snow. And I remember awakening and looking over in front of me, laying on my left side towards the woods. And very quickly came a figure in this beautiful light that just started. It came very naturally out of the woods, because it's a blistery gray day during a snow blizzard. So there's lots of snow happening. And here comes this light through the snow, and someone's walking towards me or moving towards me with this. And I thought, maybe it's my dad, because it already felt so loving, like a father, like a very good, loving father. So, maybe it's my dad. He's going to come get me. And there was two others that were next to him that I didn't recognize, but they looked almost, they were wearing clothes, I guess, like some sort of a Roman gladiator type. And yet they had these big giant wings that were, they looked very strong. So they weren't anything like I've seen pictures of angels, you know, later on in my life, that were female with these, you know, really beautiful clothes and wings. These were males. And I remember hearing later in life, when they say God has an army, I thought, yeah, he does. And they were comical towards me. I knew they were very strong, but they made me giggle, because one was taller and one was shorter, and he was tripping along the way. So the light's coming closer and closer, this figure, and it moves very quickly. And I realize in a moment when it's right in front of me, because I kept blinking with all the snow, thinking, you know, I'm not sure if I'm seeing correctly. And the snow's in my eyelashes. And I remember looking, and I'm not sure. I just remember looking and looking and thinking, is this my dad? And finally, he kneeled in front of me, and he said everything was going to be okay. And this presence let me know, he told me he was Jesus. And I thought, wow, Jesus, I think that's, you know, and he said, everything's going to be all right. And the love and all the information that came immediately in that communicative moment let me know that I was with the most divine being, and that, you know, it was like he knew everything about me, in my heart, in my mind, and he let me know everything about him instantly. It was very telekinetic, and his eyes spoke with love and kindness and wisdom. And as a young person, I was completely trusting and captivated by the presence, because I felt so safe, so loved, and so understood. He really understood what happened, everything about you. So it was like I knew him my whole life. And he picked me up with his hands were what really grabbed my attention, because they were so communicative and loving. And he picked me up in his arms and he held me. And I don't remember if it felt like my body was my body. You know, I didn't notice any difference. He just picked me up and he said, we have to go now. And I did feel a sense of urgency, because he came rather quickly. And when he did come, he kneeled down beside me and then picked me up, and he communicated quickly. So we lifted higher up above the snow, because I was able to see as we flew, we did elevate and we began to fly. And I knew we were pretty high up. And I remember being able to see at the bottom because I heard this, I was in this blissful state with the two angels and Jesus holding me in his arms. And then I heard this horrible scream and a screech and something, it was like I woke up like a startled infant and I looked over like, where's it coming from? And that's when I could see my mother at the bottom of the hill. And I say she was running around like a chicken with her head cut off. My grandma and my grandpa were kneeling by a tree. My grandmother was holding him. And then I saw my brother. I didn't see my dad. And later on, they told me my dad wasn't there. He had run and gone for help because we didn't have a car and we didn't have a phone, no cell phones. So he had to actually physically run to someone's home in this blizzard and shovel out the driveway and get their car and all that. So that took a lot of time. So all that was confirmed after the accident, where when they talked to me and I told them I saw them, they were speechless. So when I went with Jesus and the two angels, I think I've waited my whole life to really be able to talk about this because it was the most incredibly amazing thing that ever really happened to me. And in the magnitude of the whole thing was beyond words. We went to a place where it was a beautiful place. And when we got there, there was a big tree and Jesus sat down and I sat on his lap and the two angels were there. And then this group came of people or beings and they made a little small circle. And I could see that they were discussing things because when I saw my mom at the bottom of the hill, I began to communicate with my heart and my words to Jesus. I said, I think I can't come. I can't go with you. And I said, look at her, you know, she's never going to make it without me. Look at my mom. It was so, so painful to see. And yet I was in such a state of bliss. So once I snapped into seeing my mother and screaming, I just became focused on, I think I need to go back. They let me know that I didn't have to. And then they were very, very kind to me and loving. And we had a really nice visit and we were waiting for this council. They were talking amongst each themselves and I heard things they were communicating, like, what do we do now? You know, she wants to go back. It was like they didn't expect it. And yet they did. And they just needed to come to a conclusion. I remember thinking, you know, like, I'm the problem child. They're not sure what to do. So the next thing I know, they came towards us and they could not reach a decision. And I know when I was sitting with Jesus, he, you know, it was like he already knew everything, but there was a process and there was a collaboration. So they really listened to me. They listened to what I wanted. They honored what I wanted. And I think they were looking for it felt to me like they were looking for a way and to make everybody happy and also for a way to see if this fit the bigger picture, if this was even possible. And I think the whole experience led me to realize that there is a bigger picture. And I'm a part of it and I'm a very important piece. And we all are a piece and a part and very, very loved and well known, but there was a bigger picture. So and next came another council, because now this council, much like a management team, now they called in the next group. And they came in from different, it looked like different towns. And I described heaven I guess I can describe it as standing on top of a mountain, or maybe if you've been in an airplane and you look out the window and you sort of see all the communities for many, many miles, I'd say like 30 miles or so. So I knew they came from different towns, much like when you call volunteer firefighters, or, you know, they're coming from their where they live and they're gathering. So there was a mission, and this next council came. So the next council gathered, and again, they hoped to have answers on whether I was going to be able to return or not. In the meantime, I got to meet somebody, and I think there was a special purpose to that. I know there was, and I didn't know who he was, but he was he showed me himself as old, and he showed me himself as wise, and he was a little grouchy. So they didn't want to wake him up. They didn't want to have to call him, but they did. Just, there was a special purpose, and I knew that if you're going to wake him up or call him, that he had a very specific role and he had a very high position. So I could just feel it because they were a little hesitant. So he came and he just looked a little grumpy. He let me know he was serious. I mean, he was all loving. It wasn't anyway anger. It was just tired a little or whatever, you know, like this better be good. And I remember thinking, wow, you know, what's he going to show me? What's going to happen? And he sort of lifted me up under my arms from behind and sort of glided me around and showed me things. So he showed me a lot of things, but one of the things I really took back with me was that there were, I didn't know at 12 years old what to call these buildings. You know, later on, I guess they were similar to like a university or storage of records. I just knew that everything was recorded, that there were, I didn't know if it was films or books, or I just knew there were these records upon records that were stored, and wisdoms that were stored. And I knew that there was a system and a hierarchy. And I think he showed me himself as older so that I understood age with wisdom, and so that I understood his grumpy seriousness with more of a sense of order and there was perfection in it. And in that I had such great trust, because I understood that everything is interwoven and connected and considered for the best outcome and the highest outcome for my little self and probably everyone I'm connected to, and probably for the future. I mean, it's just phenomenal. Unbelievable. So I just remember him communicating me to look at my face. And I remember how chiseled it was. And he always showed it to me from the side. And then he looked forward. And it was as if I was trying to sketch his face in my mind. And he said, hold on to that. And I knew it was important. And that was part of that experience where I felt very, very, like, I didn't know why I had to hold on to that, but I did. And then he returned me back to Jesus, and I sat back with him on, you know, by the tree. I noticed that the tree and everything around was alive, in the sense of the tree was, you know, just really smart. And I thought, why, what do they mean a tree smart? But as a child, I thought the tree, it showed me that it could tell certain things about. There was a gentleman, it showed me, that approached it, and then they let me see inside, and he went, it was such a big tree. Like, I think I've seen pictures of some in my older years, like in California, where you can actually walk in them. And that was about the size, if probably bigger, but I was able to look inside, almost like we were invisible at that moment. We could see inside. And the gentleman went in and it was full of jewels. And I remember they could read his heart and mind. And he did take the jewels and put them in his coat. And I saw that they let him. He went somewhere else. I didn't see a hell or anything like that, but I knew that he had more to learn, and they were going to take care of it. There was going to be the right thing for him was going to be done. And I knew that because he didn't go on forward. It was almost like, I guess in the movie Ghost, where the ground opens and they go in, but he just kind of, I knew he went somewhere else, almost like a reform. I don't know where, but I knew it was something for growth and learning and loving. It was loving, but it was firm. So I didn't know how to put all that together at 12 immediately. And I just knew that I had to keep these memories, and the understandings were there, but they grew over my lifetime. So I went back to sit with Jesus again, and that love and his hands are something that my heart still longs for today, in the sense of that was just so amazing. And I still feel it because I still call on him and I still call all the time. I connect and ask and, you know, share and joy and all the good times and bad times. But the presence itself was so intense, and the light and the love that I can understand why people wouldn't come back. That was just beyond anything that words can explain. But I know you all understand that because you've heard it from other people, but I'm in the collective to say it's absolutely real. It was the realest thing I've ever felt. So that experience with Jesus's lap, you know, I still, just talking about it now, feel held by him. I feel a sense of it. I can still feel a hug. I can still feel a warmth. I know right now, as I'm talking about it, that the connection is now, I'm feeling it. Thank you. And he's helping me. So that has gotten me through so much in my life, because after the second council came back, they let me know. They didn't give me an answer. There was no answer, but they turned and they looked at Jesus, and Jesus just sort of smiled. And then he looked over to the hillside, and this gorgeous glowing light of gold came across the hill. And it was like a giant golden arm, it felt like, because it was just reaching forward, and it connected with Jesus, and he and the gold light were one. And I knew it was God. I knew it was the creator. It was where I came from. I knew it was home, where I belonged. I understood everything about, you know, myself. All of it just made sense and was very clear. It was absolutely so fulfilling. Your whole body knows it's the truth. And the truth came in that moment of, you know, I can return. And he, you know, no words were spoken. He just took my hand and he lifted, you know, we held hands. He lifted me up again, and we came back to my body. And he said, before the councils did say to me many times, I should share every detail that I can remember. They did say to me, the councils, are you sure you want to go back? You're going to have pain. You know, I don't know that we can protect you from that. Like, I don't, not protect me, but they were very concerned that I was going to go back, and they were very concerned, and they kept calling me, sweetheart, are you sure, sweetheart, you want to go back and do that? You know, your life is not going to be easy, and we can't promise you anything. We're not going to promise that you're going to be, you know, you might be in a lot of pain. And I just remember, you know, overriding it and saying, I will go back. And even if I have a lot of pain, I will. And they didn't say I would have a lot. They just said, there will be pain. There will be still suffering. We can't promise. They let me know that there was going to be a consequence to this accident that I would have to live with. And so I just said, no, I have to go back. And I returned with Jesus, and he said, I'll stay with you. I'll never leave you. I'm always with you. And he is. He really is always with you. That was a promise that has stayed with me for over 40 years. And I just wish everyone knew that. But just because it was so loving and helpful and comforting. So he brought me back, and I remember I didn't see a separation that I remember from my body. I just felt like I was a whole person. But he brought me back, and he stayed there, and he said, now it's going to get cold, but don't be afraid. You're going to feel the cold of the snow. It's like he was preparing me. And honestly, in that time, I think he was also healing me, because the injuries I sustained were unexplainably healed, and no one could, to this day, could explain it medically. And I'm an RN, so believe me, I tried. They returned me to so when I was back, he did stay. And then up the hill finally came my mom and my dad and someone else, I guess, to help. And my mother said, they expected me to be dead 100%, because they had seen the booth, they had seen the tow rope, they had seen my scarf, they knew the outcome. So they were expecting to find a gruesome dead daughter. And on the bottom of the hill, my grandmother had said to my mother, don't run up there, because no one should have to see their child like that. Wait for help. I beg you to wait for help. And she kind of held my mother back from running up the hill on her own. And she said, please wait for help. You know, there's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do anymore. So my mother had, before that, she had pulled on the rope to try to stop the ski lift rope herself, because it moved so quickly. Even if they ran to try to catch me, you could not catch me. I was yards ahead. And it was just that fast. So now I'm with Jesus, and he's laying me back down, and I'm returned, you know, and I'm waking up to the snow. I'm waking up to these feelings, the cold and the cold snow. And I look over to my side, and I see all this blood. The snow is now red, and the red area is just growing and growing. And I could see that, you know, it was something was really, really wrong with my body, and I couldn't feel anything in my limbs, and my face was numb, and lots of injury. So I remember my mother saying, as they reached the top of the hill, she said, who is she talking to? And who's talking to her? Is somebody there already? And then when there was no, they said, Hetty, there's nobody there. I heard somebody, she kept saying. And then she stopped, because she started to look like she was, you know, a little off, because they were like, no one's here. And she could have sworn that she heard somebody, and that she knew I was, and she said to me, who are you speaking to? And then I told her, and I was in this euphoria of joy, because heaven and Jesus to me, despite all my injuries and the angels and the whole experience to me, was joy. There was so much happiness and joy to this day. When I think of that part of my experience, my whole soul lights up with joy. My entire being lights up with the peace. I, you know, when I've gone to places of worship over my lifetime, I, to me, it's just the most joyful thing. So, and even in the woods, if I'm in the woods, whenever I'm communicating with the other side, there's so much joy, there's humor, there's love, there's laughter. And it's just so gentle and it's so strong and all of it, all of the above. So I remember that. And then they had to drive me to the hospital, which was again in New York. So it was a long drive, and they had a volunteer security guard, and he had to dig his car out of the snow. So it was just a long drive. And on the way there, oh, we're almost running out of time. On the way there, is when my mother asked me not to talk about it. She said, don't talk about it. You need to rest. And I said, but there's so much I have to tell you, Mom. And I wanted to tell her everything. And she said, no. And she hushed me to stay quiet. And so I immediately got a sense that it wasn't good for me to talk about it, and that there was something I should maybe fear to talk about it. Cause she quickly didn't want to know about it, because in her mind, she just wanted the trauma to be over with and move on to life. So we got to the hospital, and luckily I was on a stretcher, and I remember before I went in the operating room, there came a sea of nuns. It was a Catholic hospital, and they had recognized the physical miracle, and so had my doctors. And so everyone was oohing and aahing over this miracle. And I'm still in this joyful place of, you know, where I had been. And they're just like, they didn't know where I'd been, and no one asked me, but I knew that all these miracles were happening. So that was my experience. And so many things for me, because I had that experience as a child, and then I wasn't able to talk about it because my mom, again, came from Germany. They weren't, she didn't, growing up in the war had so many effects that they just didn't want to talk about death. Death was not a topic in our home. She wanted life. She wanted a new life. They wanted to fit in, be normal. You know, this in the 70s, there really wasn't anyone I could talk to. But the experience stayed with me my whole life, and it led me to become an RN. I had such faith that I went to a specialist. He gave me a book, and I sat up at night and I turned the pages and I said, you know, Jesus, just wherever my finger lands, that's what I'm going to do. And I said, and I know you're going to help me, because I asked for help. And it landed on nursing, and everyone laughed because I've never cleaned out a turkey. And they thought, she's so squeamish, she's never going to last. And I lasted, and I lasted my whole life. And actually, nursing was perfect, because I was able to help others, and I was able to see more of God's miracles every day. And so my life was not without pain. My life was not without, I wasn't on easy street. I had the same, challenges, and I wasn't given a free pass, but I had that experience, which gave me more than faith. It gave me a knowing that it's real. And I've had dreams, and I've worked with people who, who've come in and out of comas and out of anesthesia, and I've had all these experiences in life, and there's just no comparison. This is a real, real experience. And, Jesus was real. Heaven was real. It's the realest thing I know. And I'm so happy to be here today to share that for anyone that can benefit that. And this story will touch their lives and benefit and please benefit. I hope it brings healing, peace, comfort, whatever it is that your soul and yourselves are looking for. So thank you. I'm going to wrap it up, because I think they would like a 10-minute question and answer. there's so much more I can tell as far as my journey. It was extraordinary. It was joyful. But we're going to turn it over to questions and answers. So thank you for listening. I truly appreciate it. God bless. Okay.
Thank you for sharing that. If you are here in the audience and would like to ask a question, you could stand up and I'll repeat it for the microphone here so the people on the internet can hear. If you are on the internet listening via Zoom, type a question in chat and either Craig or I will repeat it. We can't really open up everybody's mics or it would be chaos. So that's kind of the best that we can do. Any questions from anyone here who would like to start us off? Yes.
I just wonder if being an RN, she has seen any of her patients or had any echoes of her experience in the stories of her patients.
The question was whether or not you as an RN have had patients who have had similar kinds of experiences or experiences that have reminded you of what you experienced that day.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I have. Yes, definitely. There's miracles and there's experiences every day. And I would see when people were crossing over or when people mostly at the end of their lives, they would start to share things. I've had a priest tell me towards, you know, when he found out he had cancer, he told me things that he had seen apparitions, but NDEs were something that I have seen, not all the time, but I have on occasion had, I would know when people started to talk a little bit, I would know. Yes. Yes, absolutely. Those are very true. Not often though. I can't say that it was a common thing.
How long were you in the hospital?
How long were you in the hospital, and would you like to share any details, I'll add to this, about your unexplained or miraculous?
Yeah, if I was an adult, I think I would have gotten more information. I don't really remember how long I was in the hospital, and no one ever really talked to me about it. I just found a report card many years later, and I asked my brother the other night, and I said, do you remember? And he said, Sue, I don't know. It was like you were just gone and mom and dad were gone. And then you came home and you were bandaged your whole head. And I could just see that one eye was sticking out. And I thought, what happened? You know, so we really never knew how long that I was in the hospital. I don't have any exacts for that. So, but I did return home. And according to my report card, I did return to school that year. So, yeah, and I know I did, because that year I miraculously healed. And then I actually went into becoming a gymnast. So go figure how that all happened. And it was just one surprise after another, to the point of, you know, wow, it was just like, how could this be? So there was no explanation from science that we could find. They just said it was a miracle. All the nuns declared a miracle and all the doctors declared it a miracle. And they said they were going to put up a plaque in the hospital. I remember that. And I remember them saying, whatever happened, she's better. And they just smiled and they said, you know, we don't know. They just didn't know. It's quite a spontaneous healing that continued to happen until I fully recovered. So does that answer the question okay?
In any arm or leg?
Did you have any after effects from the numbness, paralysis, yeah, anything else? Yeah.
I've only seen one picture because they kept my mother and kept the experience from me. The reason she said she didn't want me to talk about it is she didn't want me to relive the trauma. She believed me that I had the experience, and she called it my second birthday, and we celebrated it every year privately. And she never wanted my experience to become, she knew enough about it. She didn't want it to become something that I had to relive that trauma. So they actually took me to a lawyer because everyone told her to sue the ski hill, which they did tear down that year. And they did say, you know, this was $1 million case. And at the end of the day, my mother refused, and my father, because they just didn't want me to have to be on a stand or talk about it or relive that. And really, they didn't want to relive it because it was such a horror that even my father, who's now 80, in his 80s, when I wrote a book and I showed it to him what I saw, and he read it and he said, I knew you always had an angel. And then he said, you know, I hope, you know, I always knew, like they all knew that this was extremely supernatural and spiritual.
Okay. Yeah. Next question from somebody joining us on Zoom is, who was the man with the face that you saw in heaven, if you remember?
Okay, I didn't know as a young person, and the funny thing about being a child experiencer is many things unfold throughout your life, and I believe that's part of the plan, that you'll know when you're supposed to know. So one day, I think I was watching the Olympics as an adult, and I remember someone mentioning the name, and I knew instantly there was like something in my body like unlocked. And I was like, that's the name. And the name was Melchizedek. And I don't know if I always say it correctly, but that was the name. I knew nothing about him. And I just quickly grabbed a piece of paper and wrote down the sound of the name. And then I knew that was who I had seen. And that was what he wanted me to know. So I did figure that out much later when I was an adult. I got the name.
Next question. When Jesus picked you up, or at any time when you were around him, did you see prints in his hands?
No, I saw his hands, but I don't remember any prints at all. I saw, to me, it was just radiating this glow. He was in this beautiful glow. And I think the glow is love, and it was this love and light and wisdom, and it's all love. It's just this giant illumination of love that he carries with him. And I think that's what the light is love, because you can feel its presence coming. You feel so much love. And I thought it was my dad and people who loved me, because I knew that was loving. So he just, in light month, yeah, no prints that I noticed.
Question is, have you become religious in your life since the experience?
After the experience, as a girl, I lived in a neighborhood where I could walk, because I thought, where does, you know, they said there's the house of God, there's all these houses of God. So I decided to walk to different places of worship, and I joined worship at several different places, and I just kept looking for what I had seen, and I thought everyone there had seen it too. That's what really was my experience. I really believed everyone saw what I saw. I didn't understand the difference of different like Christian religions. I thought I didn't really understand the differences. You know, they had different names and everything. I went to synagogue. I've had friends of different religions. To me, you know, I'm deeply, deeply connected with what I experienced, and I am, I guess, spiritual and religious. I don't know if religious is the right word, but I have a relationship, and I've always had that relationship. And I think it's wonderful when people gather and have fellowship, I think, or any kind of celebration or, you know, discussion around it. So I'm very comfortable in religion or in and out either way. Because after I've seen that, I'm just comfortable, even if I'm praying in the woods or at the ocean or in my bathroom, it doesn't matter. But I do love, you know, being with others. So I don't know.
Next question is, can you share any more about what Jesus looked like when you saw him?
I mean, the physical features faded very quickly for me because you're focusing on all this love and what he's letting you know. I guess I had to get a lot of information quickly because I really knew there was urgency. But I hadn't seen really pictures beforehand of what he looked like. So for me, he had beautiful, like wavy brown hair. He did have a white robe. And I call it a robe, but back then I wouldn't have known what a robe was, but it was that long white robe clothing. And he had, his eyes were absolutely beautiful. They were like a hazel color, but mostly what I remember most was this inner glow of golden light. Like sometimes if you look in some people's eyes, when the sun shines, there's this golden glow. And this was that glow. It was very nice looking. It wasn't, you know, overly extreme, but it was beautiful. They were just beautiful, and unforgettable, absolutely unforgettable and mesmerizing. So that's how he looked to me. He looked very wise. His expression, his aura and everything is tremendous. It's bigger than I could ever explain. And you know who he is immediately. Like I didn't have to know anything about him in order to know him. He let me know everything I needed to know within a minute. So
it's time for us to wrap it up, but okay. Tell people the name of your book and how they can get it, because you've written down your experience in book form.
I do want to say about the religion part that I think for me, I am a Christian because I saw Christ and I will always be a Christian. However, I honor, you know, other people's choices. I'm just here to tell my story and say that for me, Jesus is the realest thing I know and the most loving, beautiful thing I know. I wrote a book, and in private and originally for my children and grandchildren and future generations. And then I knew it was a thank you note to God. So I share it with everyone, and it's called My Secrets from Heaven. And it's on Amazon. So it's My Secrets from Heaven on Amazon. And it's also on Kindle. So I wrote it with all the truth that I could muster up in private and in hopes that my family, friends, and your family, because we're all connected, can share in the joyful part of my experience and hopefully get some comfort or whatever it is that you're supposed to get from it, because I believe it's divinely guided. So anything else, anybody?
Thank you. That covers it. We're out of time. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for sharing your experience. It's just been an absolute delight. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you deeply for having me. It's been really wonderful. Thank you. Bye, everybody.